By listening to the Conscious Fertility Podcast, you agree to not use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Consult your own physician or healthcare provider for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Welcome to Conscious Fertility, the show that listens to all of your fertility questions so that you can move from fear and suffering to peace of mind and joy. My name is Lauren Brown. I'm a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine and a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm on a mission to explore all the paths to peak fertility and joyful living. It's time to learn how to be and receive so that you can create life on purpose. I'm welcoming back Garnett Dupuy to the Conscious Fertility Podcast. He is a wellness innovator exploring light, sound, and consciousness to enhance brain function and transformation. He's the co-founder of Lucid Studios in Thailand, where he's developed a neurovisor to promote neuroplasticity and mental well-being. And beyond technology, he is passionate about wildlife, conservation, managing a given sanctuary in Chiang Mai. And with a background in homeopathy, oriental medicine, and psychology, he shares his experience globally through lectures, podcasts, and writing. And I'm excited to have back Garnett Dupuy to the Conscious Fertility Podcast. We had an episode, it was episode 101, so check that out, on ignite creativity, reduce stress, and sharpen mental focus. And we were talking about how light and sound can do this. But I do think a little review, a short summary, is worthy and needed. And so I'm kind of interested in this, the light therapy and the sound and how you got into it and, you know, a little bit about yourself, but that's in the other episode. So short and sweet.
Sure.
But like, Okay. You know, why is it that people have gravitated to this, or more importantly, what brought you to do this? Why do you think this is something that is needed in our world, or people are benefiting from it in our world?
Okay. I characterize myself, maybe I'm deluded, but I characterize myself as a spiritual person. And that can mean different things for different people, but I've always been drawn to consciousness, to deep meaning, to why am I here? You know, fundamental questions that I think many of us have. It's always been the North Star for me. And as a consequence, I've practiced sincerely in three major spiritual traditions, other than being raised a Roman Catholic, which gave me a sense of the mysterious and the sacred. And my impression is that many of the traditions that are powerful developed at a time radically different than our time now, that most of these traditions developed, I'll say, 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 years ago. And we can only imagine what it must have been like, the context, the what we would call the philosophical or cultural context. And basically, these practices, which I've done my entire adult life sincerely, have a context, they have a principle, they have kind of a belief system. And where we are now is so different that it's hard for these traditions to have deep impact. We use them on kind of a superficial level, decrease stress or better sleep or something, but we just don't have the time and the kind of the magical worldview because we're scientific now, we're rushed, we're urbane. And what I think as a consequence is the technology that we have can help. I guess that's it, that the ancient traditions can be helped by our technology. A musical instrument is technology, and you can use sound bowls or gongs or whatever, sitars. So I guess the short reason I'm doing it is because I need it. I feel we all need it. What's the it that we need? We need help in developing a deep and refined consciousness in the midst of a challenging world.
So there's an assumption that we're not going to debate, that there's more to this life than the material world, what we can see and measure with our five senses. And Historically, a long time ago, we were able to have time to sit, contemplate, and go into these not ordinary states. I'm using word loosely, and tap into something outside of ourselves and download it, you know, have inspiration or ideas come through us. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing you say is the time when people would sit on a mountain for many years and meditate or slow down enough to access this, our current lifestyle is just so fast and instant. And to be compliant, to have the discipline to do the old way, to access what's always available to us, seems to be lost. We're not accessing it because of our society. It's just how we are. Mm-hmm. And these tools, they are not so much a shortcut, you know, because shortcut can have a bad word. I think they're a fast track. Like, I think they just work with where we are today. So, and why not evolve, right? Why not evolve? And so is that my understanding that these tools are helping us access what we need, but they can't replace a practice and still accessing whatever this is, consciousness?
I think that's all fair. It's very difficult for us to see ourselves outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we really are so much a product of our culture, of our time, of our society. Without getting too romantic about, you know, hiding in a cave for 20 years, even a lot of people in the past never did that. But let's look at it at a simple level. We humans, up until recently, spent a lot of time in the dark. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that now because of electricity and lighting. So just the fact that we don't spend much time in the dark, when throughout our evolving human history, we spent a lot of time in the dark. And dark does not mean you're sleeping just because it's dark. So, we are terrestrial and solar. We are earthbound and living in relation to the sun. We have the circadian cycle. And the circadian cycle is the metric timepiece of our organism, and it directly relates to our consciousness. So right there, we are already basically out of sync with our biology. And if the biology is out of sync, we have to expect that consciousness is going to be labored. Okay, we might have said this before. I'll make it really quick. A brain that can change when change is required is healthy. And we might have talked, make it real sweet and short. There are two kinds of changes that I'm intrigued with that technology appears to support. One is the change from I'm awake to I'm asleep. How many of us have difficulty in sleeping? And it is the bedrock of the circadian biological metabolism. So if the organism, if the brain, the nervous system cannot say, okay, I'm sleepy now, I'm tired, now I'm going to sleep. If it has a hard time doing that, just about everything else is going to have a hard time because of the circadian misalignment. Second point, let's say you're awake and you're going to go from I'm busy to I'm relaxed. I'm in task, now I'm calm. How many of us have a hard time to willfully decide, now I'm relaxing, now I'm not busy? That shift, those two shifts, you can make any animal on the planet sick if you don't let them have a sleep cycle and you don't allow them to rest out of stress. Yeah, so when I look at those two things, it's like, shit.
I got to share something with you, and this will target us into some of the research and some of the programs. So one is a couple of weeks ago, I was in Japan for 3 weeks, and usually jet lag kicks my butt. And surprisingly enough, this time when I came back, this is what I ended up doing. Sure. I know so much when I've read so much on jet lag and circadian rhythm that it's really important to get that early morning light, and light is so important to reset that. So I thought, well, I'll take this one step further. Rather than going out for my early light here in Vancouver,
sure,
I'm going to do your sleep. And you have like 4 or 5. You have one for like 7 to 9 a.m., 9 to...
Yep.
So I did that for 5 consecutive days. And I got zero jet lag, just to let you know. So there's that. Yep. So I like the device because of the intention behind it, that it's meant to help bring a state of calm. And if you're in that parasympathetic state of calm, autonomic nervous system, so many physicians have told me, healing happens. Like if somebody can get into that state several times a day. So like you're sharing, I like your, the beta one, just sometimes to get me out of that overthinking mind, just to, because if you can go from hyperthinking to just calm, or from, you know, dizzy daydreaming to focus. That's a healthy brain, and also makes life a lot more productive and enjoyable, is my experience.
Okay, two things. I'll say a general thing first, and then let's look a little bit more at the sleep thing. Because when you look at the sleep collection, as you say, there are four different time periods. Like, what's that? Okay, more basic. In the world of the brain, we've been discovering an awful lot in the past 10 to 15 years. In our world with flickering light and sound, the frequency following response, now what we call brain entrainment, was discovered in the late 1930s. And the equipment was pretty crude then. It was like spinning wheels, and the whole thing went off the shelf. Then it came back on the shelf again in the late 60s into the mid 70s. So that's a big discovery, that the brain will follow a frequency. So you can entrain a brain to go into a certain narrow state, whether it's alpha or whatever you want. Something incredibly important has happened way since then, which is what the Neurovisor is about. And I use the term brain engagement. Engagement being different than entrainment. What is engagement? It's the neurological discovery that the adult brain can still be modified or grow or learn or change. And the term is usual neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. Neuroplasticity, we thought the adult brain couldn't change after 2025. That's wrong. So are there techniques that can help engage the brain to start to make those healthy changes? The answer is yes. So we have to be a little bit updated on our brain neurology to realize that the brain can change. And if it can change when it needs to change, that's healthy. So the Neurovisor exercises the brain's ability to change according to demand. Wake to sleep, busy to calm, task to relax, have fun, chill out, deep meditate, explore. These are all based on one simple, profound issue, is that our brain needs to be adaptive in real time and also over time. So, you know, that's the, hey, it's big news, which is why I have brain entrainment as a small subset in the sessions, but they are primarily training or exercising processes, so that it's kind of like yoga for your brain. You know, your brain can go into all these different positions and postures according to need. So that's what that is. And then if you want, we'll take apart the sleep thing a little bit more, because it is helpful.
I think also I got to explain something to our listeners, because some of them are like, what is this Neurovisor? There's something you wear in front of your face. It's very comfortable. It's not cumbersome. It's small, has 9 lights, all white lights. And then you have headphones. So you're getting sound and light. What I wanted to share with the audience, how cool this thing is I would show my patients that these are just white lights, 9 lights, but they do flash in different frequencies. So they create different frequencies. Your eyes are closed and you're going to see colors and you're going to see shapes and fractals. There's no color coming off of this machine, as far as I'm aware of. So you can confirm that, because that's what I'm telling them. So no, it's just white light, but you see lots of colors, and you will see wonderful fractals and shapes as well. Mm-hmm. And again, that's your brain interpreting the frequency. So that's kind of what's happening. You're on the table or you're sitting, lights, there's stuff flashing, your eyes are closed, you're hearing stuff. So he's doing auditory and visual. And it is, like he said, engaging your brain, giving your brain a little bit of a workout. And through that, we can have neuroelasticity and over time, neuroplasticity. Did I summarize that well?
Right on.
We're right on. All right. So you have some programs. I'm going to read to them that's in your app so far. In your apps, also, I like you updating theirs and it evolves. So he has a program and there's a collection of things that you can do in each program. So there's better sleep, there's meditation, manage stress, regulate mood, brain gym, brain entrainment, as you mentioned, there's a section there, focus, neuroathletics, creativity, self-exploration, habit rewiring, processors, and lucid music. And in each of those, there's several other, I'll call them meditations, where they have a program of light flickering and auditory. On average, they're as short as 5 minutes. The average ones are 11 minutes, and there's a few long meditations. How do we know they're doing what what the intention is. What motivated you or gave you the idea, I'm going to play this music, this type of flashing, to set the intention, what you're hoping to do, engage the brain to do for all the categories? I'm curious with that. What's the science show?
I'm a smart guy, and I'm creative and inventive. However, 80, 90% of everything that is in there is from the scientific resources and research that is made public, usually out of universities. So I'll say a couple of names. They may or may not be understandable if you're not in the field, but there is the most up-to-date brain modeling theory that is in the industry right now. It's called predictive brain coding. And predictive brain coding is an understanding of how the brain processes information. And I use that model as the superstructure to build the sessions. So I can't lay claim to it. I understand it pretty well, but I did not develop it. It's there in the literature if anybody does the research. Then there are a couple of other things. There is a new field called brain signal variability. People may have heard about heart rate variability. Well, brain signal variability is kind of similar. That's also in there. And then the last one, I don't know. I mean, these words, I mean, they're comfortable for me, but this other one is called hormesis. And hormesis is a principle where small amounts of a stressor create adaptation and positive growth. So I combine those neurological principles when I structure the session. So I don't just make up goofy stuff and I hope you like it. I do hope you like it, but if you don't, then blame the neurology, not me. So, okay. So like that. Okay. The sleep, because let's get a little bit more practical. I just love all the scientific stuff. To me, it's poetic and beautiful, but okay. Sleep. There are four different sections in the sleep collection. The very first one is based on what's called circadian forwarding. This is a well-known neurological process where a person exposed to light early in the day, sunlight, or in this case, signal coding neurovisor light, that it will create a shift. It's called circadian forwarding, but it's kind of like a weird name because let's say you normally get sleepy at 11 p.m., if you expose yourself to early morning light stimulation, bit by bit, you'll start to feel sleepy at 10:30 p.m. And then if you keep going, maybe 10 p.m. It doesn't go forever, but it is a well-known neurological circadian stimulation that helps you get sleepy earlier if you have exposure to early morning light. So that's why those sessions are there. More than light, they also are introducing, activating, stimulating brain signaling so that it's also, it's like your morning coffee, but with light kind of a thing. So that's what that is. Again, I didn't make it up, it's there. So I brain coded that. Then the other one, the throughout the day, 9 a.m., 5 p.m. One of the reasons why we don't sleep well is because we build up too much sympathetic charge throughout the day. We don't go into relaxation periods during the day, that we build up stress. And the more stress, or technically, the more sympathetic charge you build up, the harder it is to go into the circadian downslope in the early evening. Because, the lowest circadian energy period is around 3 in the afternoon, the famous siesta time. Well, most of us don't go into rest at that time to discharge the sympathetic buildup. We just keep pushing, and maybe we take some stimulants to push it through. So the sleep sessions that are between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., they could be renamed something like learning how to let go, or, hey, stupid, time to relax, something like that.
What the names you use right now are afternoon rest, just let go, so close.
Getting close.
Sleep angel and sleep angel. And then you have a shorter version, just let go. What's the, is there a big difference? I mean, there wouldn't be a big difference, but why not one? Why is there three different sessions for that time?
It's like some people, You like ice cream, chocolate, vanilla, or
Okay,
strawberry?
fair
Yeah,
enough.
it's
Again,
just,
that
you
engage
know,
it's more engagement, right? Sometimes you like to
yeah,
change it up. Got it. Okay.
give you a choice.
Quick point. Garnett's episode 101, the brain signaling variability. A lot of the research that you're probably asking is in episode one. So I just want to let people know about that if you want to learn more about that. So 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. is part of that circadian rhythm to get the light. Early morning light's important. We hear so many other people talking about that early morning light, what it's doing to the hormonal system as well. Nine to five is to get that excess sympathetic charge. Like you said, we're building up and now we can't unwind at night. And then you have two more time periods. You have a 5 to 7 and you have a 7 to 9 p.m.
Okay, the 5 to 7 is the down slope. If you hit that dinner time kind of thing and you're still spitting fire and you need some help, and instead of, you know, three martinis or joint or I don't know, this helps the down slope. In terms of, like, you know, we know, okay, Oriental medicine, we know that yin is rising at 3 p.m. roughly. That is the beginning of the yin period. So if yin hasn't taken place and you're still yang charged between 5 and 7, roughly, you know what I mean, that period, right after dinner, or if you eat a late dinner, then this helps you turn the corner. This is a down slope. And then I'll jump right in. Then the last one, it's closer to sleep induction. I'll say the 9 to 5 and the 5 to 7 is more like sleep training. It's nervous system training how to shut off, how to downslope, how to shift from yang to yin, how to have not too much yang charge build up and sustain. The last one is sleep induction. It's a kind of light and sound sleeping pill that it's kind of the knockout punch. If you need that, then that's what that is.
I think I heard once when we were chatting, so I'm gonna share what's happened to me. And I think I don't know if it's like, oh, that's what's supposed to happen, or I thought I heard that, oh, I'm too much for my brain, so I kind of went la la. That when I do that 7 to 9 p.m., oftentimes, and everybody, I use like the intensity is to 10. I'll use a 7 or 8 intensity. I like it. I've worked my way up, so it's intense. There's a lot big flashing lights. You would think you wouldn't fall asleep with that kind of light flashing in your face, but I often fall asleep during that. When I do the last one, I will fall asleep, and 20 minutes later, I'll wake up noticing that the session's over and I fell asleep during the session.
We like sexy stuff, and you know, we also like simplifying things. So if it can be simple and sexy, it ends up being a cultural meme pretty fast. And you know, all the light thing, oh, you know, evil light all of a sudden. Okay, the stimulation period is one thing. I got research out of, I forget the long name, it's the U.S. Occupational Hazards and Health Department. It's the department that studies shift workers, nurses, airplane pilots, the whole thing in terms of safety and efficacy. And one of the findings there, and it's in the literature, it's that you can read it online, is that they found, not they, famously they, it was found that a short period of light intensity in and around that time increased sleep valence and deep sleep. That a short burst actually was not negative, it was actually positive. It was a short, the thing was, it had to be a short period of strong light. So not 5 hours of strong light, but in the midst, this pump into the system actually supported better sleep. So,
That
you
makes
know,
sense.
we have to be careful about a super popular social meme that is sexy and simple and it's got to be true. Oftentimes, it's only partially true. In this case, you have to put it into context.
I was just thinking of somebody, a friend of mine's coming by, and she had a concussion a while ago. And I remember in your book somewhere, I don't know if it was dehabituate gamma, but this is just totally, I wasn't planning to ask this question, but it's just entered my mind. I think you talk about one or two that are helpful for somebody's had concussions. She still has some brain fog and headaches once in a while. I told her we'll do a little sound table, some red light therapy. And I said, ha, I think there's something in the neurovisor that may help. Can you share kind of what you know anecdotally? Because I don't think you have research on this, but kind of where you would go with your sessions and with somebody like that.
Absolutely. We have to be cautious. It's not a medical device.
Yeah.
It's a, wellness device. It's kind of a exercise training device for your brain. Okay, that's cool. In neurofeedback, which is a well-developed category of biofeedback, it's really one of the only ones that survived from the 80s. Biofeedback was going to change education, spirituality, psychology, politics, wow, and it didn't. But neurofeedback has survived. In neurofeedback, and there are maybe 10 different schools of neurofeedback, so again, let's not oversimplify this. There's been a constant observation that many people, many of us, have zones of stickiness. Our brain wave process tends to get stuck in certain narrow bands. The technical term is fixated or habituated. I call it sticky or stuck or glued as an image. And in conventional neurofeedback, and I'm making this as a general statement, but it's still accurate, it has been agreed that it takes anywhere from 10 to 30 neurofeedback sessions to get the brain to move out of this sticky habituated rut in the signaling. So it's like, oh shit, what do we do? Then, as a consequence, I'll try to make this really succinct, but still true. There is another schools of neurofeedback called intermodal intensive neurofeedback. Intermodal, meaning, okay, here I am at the desk. I've got my thing. You're strapped up. Let's go to the other side of my room. There's another desk there. Let's do something different. And based on where the brain is stuck, you get that from neurofeedback. Let's go in and scramble those eggs. And you'll do it with like certain microcurrent processes or with pulse magnetic processes. I've adapted it to use light and sound processes. And I'm going to make a statement here. Please don't anybody misunderstand me. You've heard of shock therapy. It's popular in movies, or convulsive therapy. And they something in the mouth and they shock the shit out of the brain. And what this does is it moves the brain out of habituated patterns, but it's very nonspecific and it's quite a challenging process. Well, if you take all that down, 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 and if you can come in very specifically and non-invasively and make it hard for the brain to stay in that groove for a short time, then you have the basis of getting it to move. So what you've got is a three-step process, ideally. Disconnect from the stickiness, reconnect with a healthy alternative, and then reinforce the healthy alternative. So you don't let the brain get stuck where it's stuck, because the brain is always looking for signal and noise. The brain has a relentless, voracious appetite for pattern recognition. So if you don't let it sit in the rut of the stickiness, the habituation, that narrow band, it's going to be hungry for something. Right then, you give it the kale salad that it would otherwise never want to eat. And it's like, I was so hungry that shit actually even tasted good. Pardon me, I swear. And then,
Okay, on our podcast.
well, hey,
We're rated R here.
we're Canadians. I'm being conservative with my
You are
swearing.
definitely.
And then you reinforce it a little while later. So you gave them the kale salad for lunch, and you give them another salad at dinner. And that's the process. So out of neurofeedback and multimodal intensive neurofeedback, they've noted certain subjective behaviors that tend to be associated with those neurological stickiness points. And I put that, I didn't make those up. Those are the subjective symptoms that neurofeedback has determined. And they've noted some people that have bumped their head sometimes appear to be sticky in gamma, or I think also maybe in a high beta. So, I put them in the book. Again, I didn't make them up. These are subjective expressions of habituated brain wave frequencies derived from neurofeedback studies.
Excellent. And you have the dehabituate gamma and beta and alpha and delta, yep, theta. And you do list from the research kind of what that stuff looks like. And that's the great word. The notice, accept, choose again. There's that three step. I like using the dehabituating program for 5 minutes before, because that's helping unstuck, because that's what the notice accepting is unstucking. And then the choose again is let's reinforce it for something that you prefer.
Yeah. In predictive brain coding, there's this whole thing called active inference, where the brain wants what it believes to be true, and it will ignore information otherwise. And this is part of the problem with a sticky brain, is that it will prefer its habituated interpretation. It will not want to accept new information. So, you know, soften the glue before you try to shift the brain, because that glue can be pretty strong. So that's what they're 5 minutes, because you don't need a lot of time. What I mean, it's just that I come in and I disallow, it's kind of, okay, we talked about brain entrainment, where you bring a brain into a narrow band. This is like anti-entrainment or disentrainment, if anything. It's a disentrainment process.
And I always say, when we're trying to, for changing old programs, old beliefs, getting to that operating system, pruning old synapses, right? They don't serve you anymore. Yep. That pruning, you got to unstick it, and then you lay down the new pathway.
Let's make that point clear, because in the past, I think 101, I say, because, you know, I'm boring. I don't drink alcohol. I don't do weed. I don't do drugs. So what's my shot of tequila? And my shot of tequila would be the beta dehabituator, because I do a lot of, you know, buzzy, buzzy, thinky, thinky. And I think, okay, 5 minutes, blam. That's a crude use, because I disconnect. But in process, the disconnect is followed by a reconnect, that you get the brain hungry and feed it the healthy stuff it doesn't want to eat, and then reinforce it at dinner. So that's the disconnect, reconnect, reinforce. It's really potent.
So looking at some of the other popular ones here that I'll look at, again, people are either asking for focus, right? Because they're wanting to get focused. They find they have that ADHD type brain, that you have creativity and self-exploration. There's also the other one that's common is manage stress and regulate moods, which I think are cousins. So how is it, like, what makes something in your program more for focus? So you have one for called focus, manage stress, you have big peace, you have peaceful heart, gamma, gamma, and then regulate mood. You have bye-bye blues, calm down, upbeat. In general, simple terms, how does it make it different? Like, if somebody's feeling down, I would assume you could play with bye-bye blues or use upbeat, looking to lift their mood. Somebody's looking for focus, you know, they could choose your laser focus or centered, crystal clear. But kind of, again, what's the science? How do we know that this will set that intention and put us into that state potentially?
It's a combination, and I won't challenge everybody again with the technical terms, but the current neurology is exceptionally helpful in understanding basic shifts. Part of the basic thing is the autonomic nervous system, and we know we have sympathetic and parasympathetic. In the brain signal variability, you have more stability or more flexibility. The yin and yang principle from traditional Oriental medicine, Chinese medicine, is a good reflection of that fact. And the idea is that there are brainwave behaviors that tend to be associated with those states. But if you just go and say, here, the brain may not be able to assimilate that information. So there's a way of getting the brain's attention. There's a way of demanding some attention. And then there's the opportunity to give it the information that you want to give it. It's like your process. You know, there are lots of therapies that should work that don't work because the person is not prepared to introduce the therapy. It's like detox techniques or even Qigong techniques. You've got to make sure that the detoxification pathways are functioning before you demand a detoxification from the tissue. That if you detox the tissue, but all the lymphatics are screwed up, then you just made a problem. And in a similar way, if you try to introduce certain probability states to the brain, like to focus or to calm down, have you introduced a process that allows the person to engage in that process? And have you given them a way to step out and integrate that process? So it is formulaic in the sense that I just don't walk up and take, I'm using kale because it's kind of funny to me. I just don't take a piece of raw kale and shove it in your mouth and say, Lauren, you know, you need this. Chew it and swallow it. One, you weren't even hungry. Yeah. Two, maybe I should have, I don't know, you get the idea.
Yeah.
That okay, I'll repeat. Yeah. I'm a smart guy. I'll own that I'm pretty good at integrative methodologies because I like principles. But beyond that, this information is, it exists.
Well, that's the key. I want to, because you like the principles. So you're using principles that is out in our, that is documented in science, and you're applying that. So there are principles to say that if you can get the brain into this kind of wave, it's more calming, more focusing, more uplifting. Like that's what you're sharing. So there's reasons behind it. Okay, I could.
Well, you know, and it's exciting stuff. The problem is, you know, for most of us, maybe it's not in the language that we would prefer, or we haven't had an exposure to it, and we want to read the stuff, but the information has to be taken into a popular form to really start to see it for most of us. And, you know, I talk to a lot of people way more educated than me, formally educated, you know, PhDs in neurology and the whole thing. And once you get the language, it's like, oh, you mean that? Yeah, that. So I won't do it here. We don't have time, or it's not the point. But these processes are remarkably defensible if a person has the perspective to appreciate them. Right. So I try to make it more simple in the languaging. You know, a brain that can change when change is required is a healthy brain, knowing without thinking. But, I'm not making this stuff up. I wish I was that smart. Right. You know, I'm not, and I don't have the laboratory to do it. But the information is there.
So we talked about, you know, there's things for regulating mood. So if you're feeling anxious or you're feeling down, depressed, there's that. Mm-hmm. There's things to help with sleep, help with focus. Again, my definition of what will make people happy, right? If I could. Then there's people that want to have fun, like fun as in they want to explore. They want to have these non-ordinary states. Yeah. They want to tap into stuff. And so there's two places I could think of. You have one called self-exploration, right? So I'm assuming that's what that possibly is doing. Sure. And then you have under Brain Gym. And this is where I wanted some clarity with you on the Brain Gym. In there, you talk about like I got to share the app's excellent. When you click on something, you can click a little info bar and then it'll tell you a little bit more. And you talk about the default mode network, for example. Now, I'd like us to talk about it because it's out there in the meditative conscious world. And what I think I'm hearing is when that is suppressed, I don't know if it's the right word, you kind of tap into more of your conscious mind, superconscious maybe. Am I understanding that correctly?
Okay, I'll make it quick. Sort of. In the Brain Gym, there are these networks. And a few years ago, I came across remarkable research. I think it was out of Australia. I forget, a university. And what they did is they mapped the harmonic frequency of the different primary brain networks. And if you don't know what that means, we'll just skip it. But they generated incredible information. And there it was. And I just took that information and I frequency coded the sessions. Mm-hmm. So that's where that came from. The default mode network is the new hot child right now. Mm-hmm. The default mode means when you're not doing something specific, that network takes over. It's the default mode. So you picture a teeter-totter, like a seesaw. When the default mode network is up, the executive functions are down. when you go into task, when you go into executive functions, task modes, the default mode network is downregulated, to use the term. Downregulated. Okay. So, hey, guess what? We found out something about the default mode network. It allows you to kind of ruminate and daydream. You know, you're out of task. However, the most impressive quality in the default mode is it generates this mental movie of me. The sense of there's a me. There's a Lauren. There's a Garnet. There's a me that is separate from other not me's is the default mode network. One of the principal functions neurologically of a psychedelic compound, acid, ayahuasca, whatever, is it downregulates the default mode network.
Yeah, that was the word I was looking for. Not suppressed, downregulates. Okay.
It downregulates. So why? Well, then one of the commonalities of, you know, a psychedelic state in general is the feeling of at oneness. You don't feel separate from anything. You know, the ego has disappeared. Well, that's the default mode network being downregulated.
And it sounds like that's what sounds like in our society, we have a very well-defined default mode network, sense of self, feeling separate. Seems like a lot of people want to have this experience of oneness. Seems like when they do psychedelics like psilocybin, et cetera, they have that experience. Sure. Yeah. So if you wanted to downregulate that, then that would be your focus, attention, and shifting to the task under the brain networks, because they would downregulate the default mode network.
You know, there's another hot topic these days, you know, and you can't stay in it for a long time, but the flow state. The flow state basically is when you disappear into a task. Mm-hmm. Well, that means that you're entirely absorbed in executive function and task mode. Remember the teeter-totter. When the task mode goes up, where does the default mode network go? Down.
Right.
So that loss in the flow, where I didn't even think about dinner or me or whatever, is because of what's called orthogonal, the oppositional relationship of one or the other. By the way, the downregulation pathologically of the default mode network is characteristic of dementia and Alzheimer's.
So if it's too much downregulated, you're not in this body and you're...
The who am I, who are you, you know, the horrible, the long goodbye of dementia is in part. So in the brain gym, I have a collection of the most, you know, the best known brain networks. The salience is not in there. I'm sorry, it wasn't in the study. So my concept was, well, if you wanted to tune, I'm using it like to tune up, to frequency tune any one of those networks. I said, okay, I'll take a chance here. I take the harmonic frequencies. They're very weird harmonics, by the way, that were mapped out. What frequencies and in what ratios I got from the studies. And I simply coded the sessions based on the network harmonics from the study. So my thought was, well, maybe if you wanted to tune up the default mode network, then here, or you wanted to have, you know, the dorsal attention or the ventral attention network, if you wanted to focus or you wanted to open up, these are what the networks do. So I took a risk in saying, well, here are the harmonic frequencies. They're well described, what hurts and what ratios. And I took them and I coded them into light and sound with the, hey, who knows?
Clarification question, because you talked about the dorsal and ventral and you talked about the default mode network and the different systems. If somebody's looking for more calm and exploration, I should say, you know, like, then I'm understanding then you would be downregulating the default mode network if you're looking to have exploration, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Generally, generalization.
Yeah.
And but I also heard that if somebody is struggling with dementia, that may not be a good fit for them, right? Because there's a correlation between that, like, because everything's about balance. Like, people go, oh, this must be good. Like, in the conscious world, people are like, default mode network, downregulate, right? You want to be oneness. But you're saying there's a time and place, and there's I'm doing a pendulum swing, everybody. Like yin and yang, things fluctuate, and there's a rhythm, and there's a time for one should be active, and there's a time when you don't want it active.
That's right. Well, you know, in like psychedelic assisted therapy, for example, we're not talking about a street high here. And also in the psychedelic community, more and more and more attention is being given to the integration period. If you're tripping balls, colloquially, and the default mode necrot is suppressed, and also, by the way, alpha is hugely suppressed because alpha brain waves are the control freak of the brain. They're suppressed. They're locked in the closet. Then after that liberated, hyperflexible, schizotypic experience comes the hero's journey. Did I harvest anything of consequence from this liberated state that I can now integrate into the stability of my learned behavior? And in a case like that, reinforcing the default mode network, bringing back in the ego state, which is not a bad thing, by the way, otherwise we're completely nutso, but has this ego state been informed? Has it gathered or harvested anything of consequence from the flexible state into the stable state? Meaning, did you learn anything or not?
Related to that, the self-exploration, then is there some commonalities between that and the brain gym because of they would be more taking down, regulating default mode network, do you think?
No, the self-exploration are more intent on brain signal variability, moving it up into higher signal variability, higher flexibility, more dynamic, or settling it down. At some point, did we do the 20-story building analogy?
That's in episode 101, but you can repeat
so go there.
Analogy.
Okay, super
let's
quick.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. The 20-story building. The 20-story building is an analogy of your brain. That's your brain. And fortunately, this 20-story building also has an elevator, so you can go up and down. The lower floors are, again, it's an analogy. They're dedicated to stability, repeatability, predictability, known information. And it's really important. The upper floors are not about stability and predictability. They're about flexibility, novelty, exploration, surprise, uniqueness, the unknown. And that is our brain. Our brain is healthy and structured to have stability and flexibility, predictability, novelty, and surprise. And according to circumstance, that's the elevator, we go up and down to utilize the function of the different floors. The self-exploration moves higher up more reliably, where certain calming processes will move down. So in the middle, you kind of have this determined focus that also has a degree of open-mindedness. So every floor is a good floor. In the building, one of those floors is your apartment, because all the rest is like business. The floor, as an analogy, your apartment is on around about the 15th floor. So our set point, there's this whole thing called criticality and gorgeous stuff.
We're in a 20-story building, because I can't remember if you said 10 or 20. So we're on 15th floor in a 20-story building.
Correct.
Okay.
We're in a 20-story building, and our apartment is on the 15th floor. Why? You would think it would be like the 10th floor, like halfway. The demands for quick, flexible, unique responses tend to come quickly. So we have to be closer to the high floors to go into reliability, relaxation. Usually that is a slower process. So the elevator can take a little bit longer to get there. That's okay. The problem is that most of us start to get stuck in the low floors. And I'll hold up something. I don't know if I showed you that the last time. This is an MIT study.
Okay.
Looks like a rainbow.
Yeah. So just for the visual, because we put this out on YouTube if you want to see, and also audit. Oh. So it was a graph from MIT, and again, it was an arch like a rainbow with different colors.
Look at a rainbow, except the pot of gold is not at the end. It's It's a pot of shit because you don't want to go there. The
Okay.
idea is that unless we use the elevator to go up and down, the brain, our habituation tends to take over, and the elevator is more and more stuck on the low floors. So that's the self-exploration stuff. It's a, hey, you've got a great rooftop penthouse view. Check it out.
So in the before the update that I have now in the app, we had a microdosing section, right? And so I think what I see now in the new app is under each category, creativity, self-exploration, focus, you have a thing called routines. It seems like that's where the microdosing sections have come
Correct.
to. But I also we have to define because people hear microdosing and they think we're giving them microdosing of psychedelics. And
Correct.
I would like you to set it up of what the purpose is of microdosing, and it doesn't always have to be chemical, and
That's
what
right.
you were doing with the Neurovisor, please.
Okay. Quickie, because it's a glorious hour-long talk, actually. But that oh boy.
But I'll share with our those that have the old app or looking what it's under routines in any category. If you click on the routines inside that is basically what was called microdosing before, and that's I guess that's where it was, and you've confirmed that. And now we're going to talk about.
The idea was is that by moving them into categories of use, it might be easier for people to make choices. So all the sessions are still there. It's that they are put into categories of what, like focus or creativity, instead of just having them all clumped together in microdosing. The sessions are all there. We change the names a little bit to try to make them more relatable, but they're all there.
I think I might have said again, I'll repeat the episode we did 101, but when I did the microdosing of focus, I think it was 21 days, but I started around day 13 or 14 experiencing just euphoria, light bliss, just out of nowhere. I was just like, and I was like, what's going on here? And I don't do drugs either. Am I high? Like, I'm just
Well,
feeling really
yes, you are high, and that's just because the elevator went to the upper floors in the building. And I mean, they're all our brain. People think of microdosing using psychedelic compounds in low dose. I'll make a statement. All psychedelic compounds are psychoactive agents, but not all psychoactive agents are psychedelic compounds. An agent is an item or a process or a technique that can get the brain elevator moving up and down, but not too quickly and not too much all at one time. So the psychedelic compound at a microdose level is a U stressor, like euphoria, EU stressor. It's a positive stressor. It's a low dose hormesis. It's a little bit of exercise for your brain. It's a little bit itty bitty, itty bitty, itty bitty. And if you do itty bitty stressors on a certain vector over time, then the brain will tend to have a neuroplastic response. So, a little, you can walk every day a little bit and get results. So we've now, partly because of confusion, we call those sessions neurodosing instead of micro dosing, because you can get the same incremental low dose neuroplastic response using light and sound as a stressor. But it's a very low dose, very conservative stressor. But that's okay. That's the brain totally responds as long as there's repetition and reinforcement over time. So it is a way, neurodosing is a way of getting the brain to change little bits at a time without using a psychedelic compound as the psychoactive agent. You use a different agent. That's all. And it
Thank you.
works.
All right. So I want to let our listeners know. One is we still have an active coupon because when we did this back in episode 101, your team gave us a coupon. If you go to the AccuBalance website and under what we treat, there's a thing called nervous system reset is what we labeled it. We have lots of toys in there. And the top one there is Neurovisor. So if you go into the nervous system reset under what we treat, it will have a couple of blogs that I've written about actually Garnett when he talks about unsticking the brain. It has episode 101 there, so it's easy to find. It also has the coupon. So you can save on an herbivore if you guys are interested.
Okay.
We also have it in the clinic. So if you want to use it in the clinic, you can either use it by itself. You can combine it with the neuro, with the sound table. So you're getting vibration with the sound and light. So you can do it as a standalone session, or you can also use it to add on to the acupuncture session. And when I do my energy psychology sessions, I bring in whatever I can in that hour. So it's not always, but it's quite common. I bring in the Neurovisor. We don't have to use it if you don't want to use it. But it, I, as people know, I bring in every tool I can to help with a state change and a trait change. And so Neurovisor is one of those things. And I was thinking of this metaphor, you know, because we're saying it wasn't a shortcut, this technology. It's a fast track. Like even psychedelics, most of the people I've interviewed say psychedelics, great, try it once or three times in your life. They, most of them, unless they're selling psychedelics, don't say you should be doing it on a regular basis, right? It's correct, there correct. To just kind of help you access something and then continue to do your work. Neurovisor is one of those. Where I see it as a fast track, where we compare it to the old fashioned traditional approaches, which you can still do, it's kind of like in the 90s when we had dial up internet. Remember, like, try to get in. And then when you want to download something, do the picture, do. And then all of a sudden, internet got a little bit quicker, still dial. And then all of a sudden, it was wired. There was none of that. It was like instant. And then Wi-Fi, you don't have to be home now. You can go anywhere. To me, that's what this is like we could. Like some of those practices are like dial-up internet. And in our society, if somebody had to do dial-up internet, I think they'd throw their phone or computer out the window. They would lose it because they don't have the time for it. And so your Neurovisor is like how we think of Wi-Fi in a good way, instant access, and you don't have to wait 20 minutes for that picture to download. You can actually get a video too right away. That's how I see it is. I just feel it as a catalyst.
Okay, that's cool. I like it because it aligns. We all need help. That's what techniques are. To me, there is a very small differentiation between technique and technology. And, you know, hey, if it helps, how wonderful.
Sounds great. Garnett, thank you very much. I'm wishing you a beautiful end of your day or start of your day where you are. It's end of my day.
I'm in Thailand here, so it's the beginning.
And always a pleasure. Thank you. All right. If you are interested in your own Neurovisor, we have a coupon code for you that the Neurovisor team provided us when we did episode 101. It's still available. If you go to the AccuBalance website and click on what we treat, there's a section called Nervous System Reset where we talk about our sound table and the Neurovisor system. We have a few blogs in there, plus the episode 101. And it says coupon code to save 10%. So the code is Lauren Brown. I'll make sure you spell it correctly for the coupon to work. It saves you 10%. And for full transparency, that link is an affiliate link. So they track. And if you use that link from our site, they will send back some commissions to AccuBalance. So I just want you to be aware of that. However, if you don't want that to happen, just grab the coupon code Lauren Brown and you can buy it and save. And there's no affiliate tracking sent back to us. And do check out the blogs that we've written about how to unstick a stuck brain and his earlier podcasts. I think there's some good information there, and is also on our sound table and other wellness devices.
If you're looking for support to grow your family, contact AccuBalance Wellness Center. At AccuBalance, they help you reach your peak fertility potential through their integrative approach using low-level laser therapy, fertility acupuncture, and naturopathic medicine. Download the AccuBalance Fertility Diet and Dr. Brown's video for mastering manifestation and clearing subconscious blocks. Go to AccuBalance.ca, that's ACUBalance.ca.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Conscious Fertility, the show that helps you receive life on purpose. Please take a moment to subscribe to the show and join the community of women and men on their path to peak fertility and choosing to live consciously on purpose. I would love to continue this conversation with you, so please direct message me on Instagram at Lauren Brown Official. That's Instagram, Lauren Brown Official. Or you can visit my websites, laurenbrown.com and accubalance.ca. Until the next episode, stay curious, and for a few moments, bring your awareness to your heart center and breathe.